Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing Podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in the world of marketing. Now, in today's episode, I have the pleasure of interviewing Sean Malarkey, and we're diving into digital entrepreneurship and innovative marketing, basically creator marketing. What you should know about Sean is he is a powerhouse in the realm of online business, with a career dedicated to building and scaling successful ventures. He's a true digital business architect, from launching startups to achieving multi-million dollar valuations. His expertise spans e-commerce, SaaS, digital marketing, and beyond. Known for crafting growth strategies that drive real results and leading teams to exceed their potential. Now, in this particular episode, we talk about the rise of creator marketing and the critical role of understanding customer pain points, plus the impact of staying updated with trends. Sean shares lots of stories and his thoughts on how social media platforms like TikTok are changing the game and why networking and user-generated content are more important than ever. Now, if you're looking to gain actionable strategies for your business, or you just want to understand how to navigate content in the creator economy era, this episode is packed with valuable takeaways. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Sean, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Really excited to have you on here so that we can dive into a little bit of creator marketing. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Thanks so much for having me, Katya. I'm honored to be here.
Well, let's have our audience. Well, now it's our collective, our audience together. I'd love for them to get to know you a little bit more. So let's start off with, what was your first marketing role, or what you would define as a marketing role?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think my love for marketing was born. I was in finance. I don't want to date myself, but a long time ago. And this was back when direct mail, and I think it still works, but direct mail was a pretty big part of our playbook. And we were sending out approximately 1,000 to 2,000 letters a week to homeowners and people who needed financing. And at some point I asked my boss, I'm like, hey, can I change this letter a little bit? Everybody here in the office uses the same letter, and I think I can make the copy more effective. I really knew nothing about copywriting at all. Yeah. I just, when I read it, I thought I could make it more effective. And in the office, on average, people were getting about 7 to 10 calls per 1,000 letters they mail. And I made the change to my letter and got like 30 to 50 per 1,000 that we sent. And it was so successful that they ended up implementing it across everybody in the company and in the office. And actually, it was so successful for a while, some of the guys were jealous and couldn't understand how I was performing so much better and all this stuff. So anyway, that was kind of my big eye-opening moment. And it kind of made me really realize how interesting and fun marketing could be. So absolutely my first role, but kind of my first real experience with doing something effective and seeing results.
That's where you got bit by the marketing bug. That's what we can call it. I love the fact that you said that you knew nothing about copywriting, but I also think that's a bit of a misconception when it comes to marketing. Like, ultimately it's people to people. You are a person and you know what you would want to be able to receive. And I'm assuming that's what you took to copywriting, right? Like, you don't have to be a bestseller to write something that really hooks people if you know exactly where they are at from a pain point or a challenge perspective.
Yeah, very much so. And the copy change that I did to that letter made it much more conversational versus if you will. And that was what made it effective. Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so that's where you were. Where are you now? What are you doing now?
So I am a co-founder of Repurpose.io. We are a software that helps content creators get more exposure on social media.
Ooh, I like that. What do you love about what you're doing? But conversely, I want to know what you would pluck out as well too. It's always the good and the bad. Let's start with the good. What do you love about what you currently do?
You know, so I basically run all things growth in the company, which means everything from marketing to employees and scaling that side of the business. So I think what I love the most really comes back to the marketing side. Well, this is two part. It's marketing and people. On the first part, the marketing side, I have the, what's the word I'm looking for? I have a, a real appreciation for the ability to implement my ideas and then see them work or see them fail. And I've always said this, and I don't want this to come across the wrong way, but I feel like I'm pretty intelligent, and marketing seems like, and to me, in a lot of ways, it's like a validation of that intelligence. And the ironic, and what I mean by that is, if I get a great idea and then implement it and test it and see great results, it feels really good. You know, so it's like, I had a great idea and it worked. But the ironic thing about all of that is that probably 80% of the time, my great ideas fail. And the good news is we're always able to split test things. So the failure isn't catastrophic, but I'm always learning something from those failures that help shape future successes, if you will. So I never get disappointed when stuff doesn't work. And in fact, I go into most experiments, if you will, with the expectation that it will fail, because that's the reality the majority of the time. Not that it will fail, but I just don't have any expectations for success. So I kind of keep an open mind. Yeah. And when it works, it's like hitting the lottery, if you will. It just gives you a really good high.
And,
and then
it is a high.
Yeah. No,
it's
it really
totally a high.
Yeah. So, and then on the other side about what I do, is the people with scaling, just through, I guess, smart hiring practices that I've learned over the years. I love building good teams, and we do interviews, pretty much anybody for any role that we're hiring, when they make it to the interview, I've determined already that their skills are where, you know, they're satisfactory and they can do the job. And that interview almost always is more, do I like this person? Well, I look forward to working with them on a daily basis with the rest of the team like them. And that's more like a personality test, if you will. So with that said, almost everybody that I've hired over the years that works for us loves their job, loves everybody they work with. And in my kind of barometer is, will I genuinely look forward to speaking to this person on a daily basis if I have to? And so that building great teams with good people and then the marketing side, that's what I love about what I do.
Those are two really good, like, juicy picks for things that you love about what you do. And I like that you're selective about the people that you work with, because, and I'm assuming this is part of the reason that you feel that way. You can teach someone a skill, but you can't teach them a good personality. And I don't mean like good personality, you can take them out to have a good time, but like, I think in business, you're always going to have some challenges, and you need to be able to be around people that can weather that. And like, one sour grape makes like a whole bunch of sour grapes, and that really sucks, right?
Yeah, so true. And I think one of the key things too with that is we make mistakes sometimes. We hire people that maybe just for whatever reason aren't the best fit. And over the years, we used to try and hang on to people and work with them or whatever. And over the years, I've just kind of adopted this philosophy I think I heard somebody else say it, so I'll just quote it, but slow to hire, quick to fire. And
saving
a lot of headache. Yeah. And there's been so many times when we've held on to somebody because we think they're so key and vital, but yet there's, you know, just somebody we don't enjoy working with for one reason or another. And but they seem so vital that they're hard to let go. And then when we finally do replace them, it's always like, gosh, why didn't we do that sooner? You know, like,
it's a relief, right?
This person brings more joy to the role and in the company and anyway, so.
Yeah. I also like what you pointed out in regards to what you love from a marketing perspective, because I think as marketers, we're scientists. Yeah. We're all the testing, and it's not that you were expecting a failure, but you're testing a hypothesis, and a hypothesis is either going to support it, what you initially set up to do, or it's going to tell you, well, that's not what it's going to do, right? Like, one more thing. You got to have all of those at bats from an experimental perspective for marketing, so that when you knock it out of the park, knock it out of the park. And again, what a high that is, right?
Yeah. And interesting, if I could just tell a quick story for a minute regarding a test that we did with our hypothesis. I was reading our copy on our homepage recently, and on repurpose.io, we were getting about a 12% conversion. And, yeah. And I was looking at it thinking we could do a lot better reading the copy. And so I hired this great copywriter referred to me by a friend who'd seen tremendous success. He wrote this whole page of copy, wrote a bunch of pages, but on this particular homepage test, we did an A/B test. And on our tracking software for conversions, I can scroll down the page. There's like a heat map element, if you will, and kind of see it. Like, and we have at the top, the header sign up button right there. And then as you scroll down, there's multiple kind of supporting things with sign up buttons as you go down. And I noticed on the split test with the copy that there was about double, and this is very early, double to triple the amount of clicks as it went down. And so I just thought, bingo, the copy's working. People have to scroll down to be sold more, to be convinced to sign up. And ironically, through, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand visits, it became pretty clear that 99% of the people were just signing up above the fold. And it kind of evened out as it went down. And what we ended up realizing at that point was how important the above the fold section is, which just sounds so basic. But when you're testing all this stuff, it was a great reminder. So we immediately, and in his copy actually performed slightly worse through a couple hundred thousand visits. No insult to him or anything, but just for whatever reason it did. So we went with the original copy, made a couple slight changes just where it made sense so it was easier to read. But then put all of our focus on headlines, and through three or four more tests, we were able to double the conversions because of my observation and paying close attention, looking at this thing, scroll down, realizing that wasn't important and it was all above the fold at the end of the day. Putting my focus there changed the order. We had created an order of like 20 different tests we were going to do, and the headline stuff, I don't remember where it was, but we ended up bumping it straight to the top, and that doubled our conversion in the course of about 60 days.
Well, we live in a world where people don't have the patience to scroll. And if they do, it's not even a full scroll. It's like a little baby quarter scroll, whether it's on your mouse or like on your phone. So that above the fold is so important. And the calls to action above the fold too. 1,000. I think, trust signals, headlines that hit the nail on the head, and then calls to action. Those are such key things to have above the fold. Now, we've already talked about what you love about what you do. We haven't gotten into what I could pluck out if I had a magic wand. So what would you pluck out of what you currently do?
This is really a tough question, because there aren't many things that I don't like about what I do. Probably like the organizational stuff. I don't even know how to contextualize
like HR.
Yeah, a little bit of that, but more like, okay, we have this great meeting and we determine this stuff. And then it's like, okay, cool. I need to put this stuff in the doc and then create notes around that and then share it with six people. That's so basic, but I'm trying to think if there's any one thing. It's a tough question. I think it's valid.
That's the non-fun part, if you ask me, is all of the admin, the follow-up, the, okay, I just want to do what I want to do. Right.
Yeah. Maybe so, I will say one thing. The standing meetings, I have very few. I'm very protective of my time. Freedom is kind of like my number one priority. And I usually don't schedule meetings on Monday or Friday. So I have those days open to kind of start the week and finish the week. But we do have a few standing meetings that are necessary for short term purposes, usually. And those are the things I dread. I don't know why, but it's like.
We all have meeting fatigue. Like, the fewer meetings we have, the better it'll be. Like, we have to stop having meetings about things that we haven't done yet because we've been in meetings. So how can we solve that? I actually just saw something on LinkedIn where someone posted like how many hours in a month people spend in meetings. It's an astronomical number. So I think actually that's a good plug out. Now, because of the space that you're in, I imagine that you have to stay up to date with the trends. So I'm really curious, what do you do to stay up to date with trends, like marketing trends specifically, not like TikTok trends, but maybe you use social media to stay up to date? Is there a podcast, a newsletter, a show, a book, like a person that you follow to stay as up to date with what's happening in marketing?
Yeah. So honestly, it's more just being like, I'll be transparent and I'll give you an answer and give you my transparent answer. For staying up to date with trends, I'm really grateful to be part of a couple of good masterminds and just good friends who are doing big things. And
yeah,
none of us, well, most of us don't compete directly with niches or industries, but everybody in these groups is very willing to share. Had many, many, many multi-million dollar initiatives shared with me that I've implemented, and then vice versa. So just having great friends, just had a conversation. It's been evolving over the last month, but a good friend of mine shared with me a funnel that they're doing to scale their SaaS. I swear I wouldn't share, but it's mind blowing and we're implementing it now. And and he's seeing, this is going to sound ridiculous, but he's seeing $3,000 a day MRR growth with his
software. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insane.
That's huge.
Yeah.
I'll get the secret after after we stop recording.
Just share with you. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, but so that's that. And then when it comes to actually like short form content, I personally, we've never really cracked the code. But I'm very good at identifying it and seeing it. A lot of our customers have. I always use the joke about not digging for gold, but selling the shovels. So our software is the proverbial shovel. But yeah, we suck at like trying to create great content. I don't know. It's not our main focus. It should be to some extent, but anyway. But as far as trends go, because of what I do, I spend an absurd amount of time on social media and seeing good content. And it's been really interesting this last year, just seeing a lot of different things emerge and how content's kind of shifting and changing. This year, we've really seen a rise of like storytelling. There's a million accounts now that's like day one of converting my school bus into a coffee shop, or day one of buying this raw land and turning it into a homestead or whatever. And that kind of content, or day one of building a business. There's these girls, I don't know if you've seen them. They have I think it's called the Sexy Girl Pickle Company. And they have built this.
I have not seen that.
They literally are following that path and like showing them how they love pickles apparently. And people who like pickles are passionate, and they've been sharing their journey and starting a pickle company. And so we've seen a big rise in that. And then with content, you're seeing a lot of silence removed kind of content, where there's great softwares out there now that you can put a 2-minute short into a reel or whatever you want to call it, TikTok, and remove all the silence. The talking is like quick, fast, snappy. And it's been happening for a while, but this year we're starting to see a lot of that come about, and that content typically does pretty well. So
you are on social and naturally will follow the trends that are coming up so quickly. And I think personally, social media is a really great place to stay up to date with trends, whether you're in the creator space or not, because I think that you are a demographic. So it's always a place for inspiration, right? Whether you intend to create it in a TikTok form, like there's something about like the spark of what's happening out there, or like you said, these trends that you're starting to see, right? I've started to, and especially on TikTok, I love to do this, is to try to predict what that next kind of trending sound or trending dance could potentially be. Right.
On your TikTok.
Yeah. Like it's insane. Like I love to see it from the beginning and then see it just kind of grow a little bit. It's super inspiring. So, you know, and then the other thing that I want to also go back to is your being part of masterminds. To me, it's about like networking. It's having these conversations, because there's something to be said about like, and it's also part of the reason that I love this podcast, right? Because I'm having a conversation with you and I will leave inspired to try something else. And maybe it is the CTA, maybe it's something different, or maybe it's looking at my social media slightly different. But like, I think that you have to have these conversations to like dig a little bit deeper and like, what are you seeing? What are you seeing? Because sometimes when you are reading news articles, right, or like reviewing a newsletter that you get, if that's been curated for you, and now I'm only interested in maybe like one article of really like 20 article links that they've put in there, and then that'll take me down the rabbit hole. So it's so much easier to hear other people's perspectives. So I love the fact that you are part of masterminds, and networking is part of like how you stay up to date with the trends, especially being in the space that you are, which brings us to our big subject at hand, which is creator marketing, right? Creator marketing, and more specifically kind of what you guys are doing, which is really focused on like the amplification of creator content. But before I dive into that, I would love to ask you what the difference is between creator marketing and influencer marketing, because I think most people hear influencer marketing, but I don't know that I hear creator marketing leveraged as much. So how would you define the difference between the two?
I don't know. How would you define it?
Well, I would define it as such. So I think that from an influencer marketing perspective, you're focused on, yes, creators for sure, but the focus is on social creators. And I think that creator marketing is a lot wider, right? Like I could potentially fall under, I actually have to start thinking of myself as a content creator because I am a podcast host, I'm not an influencer, but I am a content creator. So I think like, to me, that's the way that I kind of slice and dice it, is an influencer is very social focused. They also have a community, but it's a bit of a wider community, whereas a content creator can have more niche and you have more at your fingertips, especially as a brand. What do you think of that definition?
Yeah, no, that's really good. And it's interesting with that additional context, it helps. The influencer marketing, I guess I view that person as somebody who's built a great community that likes them and trusts them. And if they talk about something, refer something, or market something, there's a high likelihood that their audience will be like that. And then when I think of creator marketing, I mean, it's, I guess we could go a million different ways with it, but it's, yeah, I don't know how to define that exactly, but I guess I personally, if you just ask me, I would think it's somebody who can just create great content, understands marketing, understands calls to action, understands consumers and what makes them work. And we deal with a lot of UGC creators.
Yes. And
it's pretty incredible seeing the wide array, I guess, of skill levels and knowledge levels. Like, recently hired a girl who has been doing some amazing stuff for us, and her history is in TV production and infomercials. And so she really got direct response marketing in a way that nobody I've ever worked with have. So she sends me scripts and I just, yep, it looks good. I don't even have to see them. I mean, in fact, she's got full creativity or creative freedom at this point. But most everybody else, I have to go through, work on the hook, work on the call to action with them and
kind
of through that. So going back, I did want to point out one quick thing before I forget, because I think this is super valid regarding trends.
Yeah.
We have seen a real rise in AI algorithms, if you will, and AI dominating the algorithm. In the past, the algorithms were pretty clearly defined by rules and things. So for example, and it still exists to some extent, but in the past, it was use these hashtags, use these captions, you know, create great content or whatever. And now you're seeing people with 100 followers get 10 million views on a video. And that just clearly tells you, and we used to see it quite a bit too, but we have so many people that from Repurpose that write in and tell stories that are just blown away with how something did with that. And it's very clear to us that AI is now looking at your content somehow, probably has been fed all of the content historically that did really well and can identify things. So it's really an interesting time in this space, because you don't necessarily need a huge audience to have something go really viral in ways that you didn't before. You know, it used to be build a big audience and things would kind of grow. And that does happen quite a bit, but there's so many stories that we see from people that just have great content pop off. And I think that's been a big change in the last year with the rise of AI. So So I think it's easier than ever to get discovered, to grow an audience, to have an impact because of that.
I would definitely agree with that. Although I am really curious if we double click into like what you're talking about, or maybe I just need some clarification. Do you mean AI as part of the algorithm? Mm-hmm. Like AI is going in there with like whatever natural language or machine learning to identify like what people would more likely be able to engage with when you talk about that?
Yes. So they're looking at your content and making a decision before anybody else sees it, that it's going to be successful or not. And this wasn't happening 5 years ago. Meta kind of started this years ago with identifying things in the content. Instagram years and years ago, they could identify sunsets, and they know that sunsets, for whatever reason, typically do pretty well. And there was things like that. But in the last year, we've just really seen almost all the rules go out the window. You know, use these hashtags, and you know, all that stuff seems to be going away. And it's from all the data that we see inside Repurpose, and we have tens of thousands of people using it daily. It really seems like there's been a big change in the way algorithms work and what content does well and what doesn't.
Well, and you have to be really, you talk about having to follow a trend, because your business model is one where a creator goes to repurpose.io to be able to more easily distribute their content. Yep. Do I have that correct?
You nailed it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I read it on your website. No, I'm just kidding. I did go on your website, but like, well, I wanted to make sure that I was completely understanding it. So yeah. I would love to hear your thoughts on, one, the value of creators for a business, and two, well, actually, let's start there, because they're kind of separate and I don't want us to get lost in the first. So one, what's the value of a creator for business?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And this is, I guess, just a pretty obvious, easy answer. There's a lot of value there. If somebody has the ability to communicate clearly and effectively, and something in the way they say it, you know, gets the message across to your audience. Great. So the value of creators has just gone up and up and up over the years. And I see it daily. I can remember a time when it was almost shamed to promote anything, to sell anything. Yeah. And now it's become such commonplace. But anyway, so the value for a creator is immense. I'll just share a quick story. I did several years ago, I helped a friend who has an e-commerce brand. It's a supplement and protein company. They do vegan stuff. It's KOS is the name of that brand, KOS. And we created some influencer pods. And I had one, and we gave them product every month to use, and asked them just provide a video back or whatever that we could use for socials and also for advertising. And I had one video that was created that ended up doing probably more than $1 million in sales. And it had like 7 or 8x ROAS. So that content creator was literally worth hundreds of thousands of dollars to the business. So from a business perspective, it just keeps going up and up, and the content creators are getting better and better at what they do. And the value is immense.
Well, and that specific value that you're talking about is, like, I'm assuming in an ad of sorts that you could direct that one-to-one, but what would you say to the outside of an ad, like the value that they're bringing, right? So that was one video, but I think the best way for a brand to be able to use creators is for their UGC, right? Like, I'm in marketing. I have to pay a designer. If I want to do a photo shoot, like, the amount of money you can spend on something and not even love all of the pictures versus really basically getting an army of content creators to get different perspectives and really have that choice. Like, what are your thoughts on, like, having a ton of creators as a brand so that you can maybe lower your costs from a creative perspective while also creating something a little bit more authentic?
So it starts with, really, I think, you know, from a business perspective, identifying who your consumer is. And that may be one archetype, it may be multiple. And then finding people that resonate and can speak to that crowd, if you will. And usually it's relatability is a good thing, or authority. So for example, Gary Vee has a lot of authority, right? So if your customer profile is somebody that would listen to Gary Vee typically, he'll be. Yeah.
This is what I was afraid of. I'm sorry. Listen, he agrees with you.
Is that what he's saying? Yes.
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah. So anyway, and we've had a lot of success with that, like identifying who our customers are, and then finding creators that can speak to that customer. They may look like them. They may communicate in a way that resonates with them. Some weird and just kind of interesting things we've noticed. Women and men prefer to watch and listen, or at least watch women over men. I don't know why. So whenever we have ads that are running all the time of men and women, the women always get more watch time. So that's an interesting observation for us that kind of steers some of our marketing. But I will say this from the authority perspective, for whatever reason, our men do better when they're like talking from an authoritative standpoint on that. So I don't know if there's some human psychology there, but these are just observations that we've noticed.
Oh, I think there's years of human psychology in that statement right there, yeah, for sure.
I feel really I could see it being transparent, yeah, but I'm just being real with you. That's some of the things that we've noticed that help direct our future stuff. So going back to your original question, if I didn't go down too far of a rabbit hole, which was, what was the question again? I'm just kidding.
It was, well, actually, you already answered it. It was in regards to just kind of content creation. And, you know, I think you actually answered it quite beautifully, right? You know, I'm asking if there, do you need an army of them versus just creating one? And I think to your point, one of the things that you've said is it's really about knowing what your audience is and what your intent is behind the content that you're getting. Using Gary Vee as an example of like, all right, he is an authority figure. So based on that, who do I want from a creator perspective, and what kind of content do I want? And sometimes it can be one, but sometimes it can also be a fleet of many of those same authorities to really get in front of the right audience that you have. So believe it or not, you answered it. I was following along the whole time. The dog barking helped me. It connected all of the dots for me.
It threw me. Sorry. I will say too on that, with that project I did with Cost to help them out, they had three, their protein, they have a vegan protein, it's really good. This is a big seller. And they had three kind of customer profiles. They were the athlete who uses protein as part of their meal and workout, yeah, supplements. They were the vegan, I don't know how to say this, but like the hippie snowboarding person, yeah, that got a tattoo here or there. And they appreciate vegan stuff. So there was that crowd. And then there was the mother, the 40-ish year old female who was looking to get in better shape or lose weight and would use the protein as part of her meal plan, if you will. And so we created influencer pods around those three. So we went and looked, yeah, found people that matched those profiles and got them as influencers. And I think that particular campaign, we had 30 for each, for the three different customer profiles, and so 90 in total, and we shipped them two packages a month and just asked them to create content, and that it was, I don't want to say an explosion, but the brands, their e-commerce 6x'd in 6 months, and would have done even better, but they sold out of their number one selling protein in the 6 month.
Sometimes I feel like that's such a good problem to have, right? Like I want it flying off the shelves. And I think the value also of creators is and this is such a cheesy word, and I say it all the time on the podcast, but it's authenticity, right? Like there's something about somebody else being able to say it versus someone who is trying to sell the bar, right? Like I want an honest opinion. What does it taste like? Because I'm tired of paying, especially in like a protein bar perspective, like the box of six is like an astronomical number. And then I take one bite and it's crap. Now all of a sudden I have, you know, six, you know,
yeah,
six and three quarters of a protein bar pack that nobody will ever eat. And I've just, you know, wasted that. So I think like it's a great example, and it's very simplified for our listeners in general to be able to see like that one-to-one. Now we've been talking about the value of creators for brands. I'd love to hear your perspective on like what you can do for a creator, because your business is on like, all right, how can we get more exposure to the creator? One, why focus on that? And then two, how are you determining how to get more views? Is it just creating more content and then like spreading it out all over social media?
Yeah, great questions. So why are we focused on that? I'll do the first one first, but while we're focused on helping creators and then the getting more views part. So Repurpose.io is actually like almost a 10-year-old company now. And it's a evolution of a company, if you will, in the sense that when we very first started, we were a WordPress plugin that allowed you to take your podcast, turn it into a video podcast, and then automatically upload it to your blog, either as a post or a draft. So when, when you finished your podcast, the Libsyn feed or whatever service you were using, we sent it to us. We created a video, posted it on YouTube, either if you wanted it private, draft, or posted, and then sent it to WordPress as well. And after a number of years, people started asking, hey, it's great that you can put it on YouTube, but could you also put it on LinkedIn? And that request came in 5 times over the course of a year, maybe. And I was like, okay, let's look into that. And, oh, yeah, we can do that. So that became kind of the next evolution, if you will. And then that was, okay, if you can do YouTube and LinkedIn, could you put it on Twitter? Can you put it on Facebook? Can you, wherever? And so that kind of, over the years, is what happened. And then in the last 3, 4, 5 years with the rise of short form content, it quickly became clear to us that like 80-90% of the people were interested in that. And so short form content became really our focus. For those that don't know, what Repurpose does is we allow you to post to one platform, and then that sends a signal to us to grab the content, the video, remove the watermark, grab the captions and the hashtags, and repost it everywhere else you want. So how it works, it's pretty simple. So you just log in, connect your accounts. So you authorize Google, whatever you want to do, and then create a workflow that says, when I post to TikTok, I want it also go to Instagram. I want it also go to YouTube. I want it also to go to LinkedIn. I want it to go to Facebook, to Twitter, Snapchat, you name it. And so it gives our creators the ability to post to one platform and then have a presence everywhere. And we also do backups and stuff. So you can, with a couple clicks, you can send all your content from TikTok into a Google Drive folder or Dropbox or whatever. And then a whole bunch more. But the main MVP for us, or the MVP, is posting once and then having your content appear everywhere. And so that's, does that make sense? Is that clear?
That totally makes sense. I'm not lost. Sometimes I get the deer in the headlights look when I'm listening, just so everybody knows. I'm right there with you. I think what I was going to ask you also was, in regards to putting it into one platform and having it be distributed, do you, or what are your thoughts in general about this, about curating the captions so they fit with the social platforms? Do you have like AI as part of that to be able to do that? Or are you just posting the same content on each of the platforms, not just like the video, but like the ad, like
the copy.
I wanted to say ad copy, but it's the post copy.
Yeah. So great questions. We do have the ability for AI to do it. We opted not to enable that in an automated fashion, because we just didn't want the risk of spitting something.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I use a lot of AIs. You can tell when something's AI. I think it's more of like, I worry as a creator, but also from a business perspective, every platform is different, right? Like the audience is slightly different. So if I have, you know, let's use the podcast as the example, right? Like I've got my website, I've got YouTube, I've got my different channels. But what I want to post on YouTube is very different than what I would post on the website. And then also, conversely, very different than what I would post on LinkedIn. It can't be that long. So what are your thoughts on like catering your post copy per social platform? Do you guys balance that out?
Yeah. So another great question. With Shorts, we find the content works universally well almost across all platforms. With long form content, I would agree with you that it should be a little bit different. In some places, it works better than others, depending on your niche or your audience. For example, if you're in HR and all your content's around HR, LinkedIn will probably work well for you, whereas TikTok may not be as good, or maybe it is. You never know. So our platform gives you the ability just to kind of put it everywhere. And for sure, there are some people that only hang out on LinkedIn, but maybe appreciate your day two of turning a bus into a coffee shop because it entertains them for a brief period of time. And then they get interested and they follow you as a result. So it just gives you the ability to kind of find those people that are in other places. And then when it comes to the captions and the descriptions with short form content, it's, I don't want to say irrelevant, but it's not as important as it once was. I think on YouTube, we had a call with him today and was told that 80% of the views are coming from just the scrolling. And I don't know if you've ever looked at YouTube Shorts, but you don't really see captions or descriptions there. Which makes cover art, you know, the cover photo and all that stuff almost irrelevant because 80% of the views are coming from that. So there used to be some rules where you didn't want your captions being the same on all these places because it would penalize you. But at the end of the day, and we do have some in the software, we have some settings, if you will, that give you the ability to remove certain hashtags, or like, for example, if YouTube or TikTok is your start and you use FYP for your page, you can click a setting and say, remove all hashtags, replace with these when it goes to YouTube. So you can kind of customize for that. But honestly, I'll just say that's not as important as people think. Places like Twitter and a couple others, there's some real discovery happening with hashtags, but it's pretty rare that it has much impact anymore. And the thing that people I think really should kind of wrap their head around or understand is that these networks are all in a race for content right now. Content equals attention, and attention equals ad dollars, and ad dollars equal business growth and revenue. And so we meet almost weekly with at least one of the big platforms. And there's a real race right now for everybody's attention, with the TikTok ban potentially coming. All the others are like vultures just trying to get these TikTok.
Exactly. It's not, I will say this, it doesn't feel like such an original idea when they're all trying to do the same thing. Give me something a little bit more innovative. I want to be definitely entertained from a platform perspective. I think that kind of leads into I promise we're almost to the end of it, but I have a question in regards to the trends that you're starting to see from either a creator or influencer marketing perspective. What kind of trends would you predict are the next kind of big ones around the corner in this particular space?
Good question. It's kind of not a tough one to answer, and I don't want to plug my platform here, but I do see a trend. There used to be a focus, focus on one network and whatever. With short form content kind of dominating most of the content that's being put out now, we are starting to see people expand their presences more. Tools like us make it really easy to do that. As far as trends go, and I'm trying to think if there's anything that comes to mind. I don't know. It's really crazy. If you look at how good content creation's gotten and how entertaining it's gotten in the last year, 2 years. And if you look back 3, 4, 5 years ago at some of these people and some of the bigger influencers and the content they put out, it's just getting better and better and more professional. I think obviously AI will play probably the biggest role in any change that's coming up. And that can mean a million different things, but I can just tell you from our perspective and the, kind of things that are becoming available to short form content creators or just content creators via AI, it's mental. We're working on integration with Repurpose. I think you'll start to see some of this stuff as more of a trend for people that have global brands or some sort of global appeal. And what I mean by that is maybe they sell a watch that can be sold globally, e-commerce works now globally or whatever, versus a pizza store in Nantucket. You know, they don't have necessarily global appeal. We're working on an integration that we're using AI that if you post a video with a talking head or talking audio, we can take that content, translate it to a different language, and then push it out to a different channel. So for example, I have a good friend, one of our customers who's become a good friend. He has a really big TikTok presence, over 10 million, and he's got over 20 collectively. But all of his content's in Spanish. He's in this relationship niche, if you will. And he's really brilliant. He shows videos and clips of couples fighting, couples falling in love, whatever, and then usually plays both sides. So if there's an argument or some sort of tension, he'll speak to why the woman may feel a certain way and then why the man feels a certain way. So he's done an amazing job of just creating really great content that people like. It kind of opens their eyes as to, oh, I didn't view that differently or whatever. But anyway, all of his stuff is in Spanish, and he will have the ability to post a TikTok in Spanish or a reel in Spanish, whatever. And that would send a trigger to repurpose to grab that content and translate it and create brand new videos in five. We'll have a lot of different options, but let's just say he chose five languages. He speaks in Spanish. Yeah. So maybe it's English, French, German, Russian, Mandarin, or Chinese. And then create those new videos, and then it'll push out that content to his name's Andres. So it's Andres in English channel, Andres in German channel, Andres in Russian channel. And he'll be able to start growing his audience globally, posting one video, end up having 25 across the five different social platforms.
How wild. That is so wild. And, you know, I'm gonna be honest with you. Typically, I don't like to dive into whoever I'm interviewing's like company or brand. And I find that this is very,
it feels so corny and authentic. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I can see so many ways that a brand and a creator can leverage all of this as well too, because I work for a global company, and the localization is something that's really important, especially in Europe, right? Like, it's not just language, it is the localization. And I think influencers and creators really lean into the globalization and localization part of like marketing. So I love the fact that you have that in place, because I would never have thought that you could, well, because I deal with translations all the time. I have to go through a translation company, and that's a big pain in the ass to do. And like, and the timeline that it takes to do that. So the fact that you guys have the ability to do that, that's pretty fascinating. That's pretty insane. Cool stuff.
It's not current, I will just say, for full disclosure, but it's coming, and we'll have it here with our new release for a new version.
You heard it here first, my friends. You heard it here first.
You did. I hate it. I hate
someone probably take. Well, I like the fact that it's even on the roadmap, right? You're thinking ahead, and that was what the question was, looking ahead, like what could be the biggest trends? And I love the fact that you're thinking of that just in general. I do have one final question for you. Oh, sorry. Did you have one?
No, I brought that up in just the broader sense of how AI is going to change things.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's one little integration, and we have about 50 different ideas involving AI and different things that'll really help people create content. Yeah. So,
well, AI is the trend for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how other softwares are going to leverage it as well too. I think I'm interviewing somebody else in like the next week where we're talking about AI and lead generation. So I think that'll be really interesting to see, like, how does one work with the other? Let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
I do have one final question for you, and that is my closer. If you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
Gosh, this is kind of marketing and growing your business or your brand advice. When I started, I really believed in reciprocity. And instead of reaching out to a company and saying, just as an example, hey, I can create great content for you, I would, and this isn't me, I'm just using this as an example, I would create the content and send it to the company and say, hey, I made this video, do you like it? And if they didn't respond, I would send another, and I would say, feel free to use this or whatever. And generally when I, and this happens coming to us now at the same time too, and then vice versa. Whenever I did things to be helpful first for other people, I never had an expectation of reciprocity, but reciprocity is a very real thing. And it was it was kind of a game changer and an accelerant for my growth personally. And I see people doing it now. We probably get 5 emails a day from people who want to create UGC for us because they see our UGC ads. They know we do it.
Yeah.
And 1 out of 100 will have created a video. And I don't even have to watch it to know this is somebody I already like. And I want to work with people that kind of have that go-getter attitude, if you will.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I know that's kind of a broad response, but I think just in general, doing things for other people first and that are helpful and that are within your skill set or within your lane, generally reaps rewards. And if not, I always viewed it in the very beginning, I helped a lot of people that, this is kind of a long story. I don't want to get into it too much because I know we're getting towards the end, but I helped a lot of people with something that I was really good at that I looked up to. And so I reached out and said, hey, I'm willing to do this for you. No strings attached, whatever. It would just be an honor to help you. And that was very true and very real. And about 60 to 70% of those people came back to me and said, how can I help you? And I'm like, oh, it's funny you ask. Here's what I can do. Here's how you can help me. And they did. And that was the, so that's kind of the number one advice, I think, I don't know, that's horrible number one advice, but that's some really good advice. I think.
No, that is not horrible number one advice. And also, I think that it's a good callback to your initial how you keep up with the trends. To me, what I hear is that you value the human connection without expectation. And I think that that goes a long way. And we all probably need a little bit more of that in our life. Well, I cannot thank you enough for coming on here to the podcast and like sharing a little bit more about your company, but also like just kind of your thoughts on creators and content and amplification and social media and all of those good tidbits. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Katya. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so I hope that you guys are ready to dive into the key takeaways. I've got some not as obvious key takeaways for this episode. I know that we dove deep into content and the creator economy, and those are some of the key takeaways, but I want you guys to be surprised. Okay, so my first key takeaway is content creators are an asset for your brand. This one probably seemed like a no-brainer to be a key takeaway, that content creators are valuable assets for your company, and it's because they can amplify the work that they do across platforms, which is a massive benefit that can really be a game changer for a brand. Now, Sean made it really clear that tapping into the world of content creators and amplifying their work across multiple platforms can do wonders for the brand's visibility and engagement. Now, imagine posting your content once and having it automatically spread across all social media channels. That's exactly what repurpose.io makes happen. Now, during this episode, he even shared some eye-opening stats, like how one influencer video drove over $1 million in sales for a brand. That's the kind of impact we are talking about. Now, I will say that does not mean that influencers can make that substantial of an impact on the first go. I always want to let people know that as well too. This is definitely an exception, but it does go to show you how impactful it can be. We also, in this episode, touched on how leveraging AI can automate the process of translating and repurposing content for a more global audience. He did mention some stuff that was on the roadmap for repurpose specifically. It is like having a supercharged way to reach more people without a ton of extra effort. Amplification, amplification, and amplification. Plus, using creators can be a way more cost-effective way of getting creatives compared to traditional marketing methods. We will never not need the designer, so please know that. I don't want you guys to think that I am saying that that role is obsolete, but what I am saying is you can do so much more with a content creator as well. Supercharge your brand's presence. Think about how you can work with content creators and get their awesome content out there everywhere. Key takeaway number two. Team building and marketing experiments. Now, this is a twofer key takeaway, right? So there's two chunks, team building and then marketing experiments. By focusing on smart hiring practices and maintaining a test and learn mindset, companies can really foster a positive work environment and discover innovative marketing solutions. I chunked these two together because I think you have to hire the right people and the team building process in order to have that mindset of marketing experimentation. Let's first, though, talk about team building. It's so important to find someone who not only has the right skill set, and remember, you can teach skills, but one that is also a good fit for your team's vibe. I love the philosophy, slow to hire, quick to fire, because it means you're careful about who joins the team, but you aren't afraid to make changes if things aren't working out. It's a little bit of experimenting there as well too, huh? Now, this focus on both skill and personal compatibility helps create a work environment where people love their jobs and work really well together. Ultimately, you're building a dream team, right? Now, on the marketing front, testing and learning isn't new, but we, in my opinion, don't talk about it enough. Testing is where theory meets reality. You can spend all day brainstorming and planning on a whiteboard, but nothing beats seeing how real people react to your ideas. It's like taking your hypothesis and throwing it into the world, into the wild, to see if it actually works. Now, Sean's approach is all about embracing this experimental mindset. He shared a fantastic example where testing different versions of copy for a direct mail campaign led to one version that dramatically outperformed the other. Now, this was back in his youth, but it was a great example. So turn your abstract ideas into tangible results and test with the right people on your team. My final key takeaway kind of touches on the whole direct mail, and it's actually direct email. So my third key takeaway is email marketing isn't dead. And that's just it. Email marketing isn't dead. It just needs a better PR department. So this is a callback to how he got started in marketing with that story that I had just mentioned. Sean's story about how he leveraged direct email as a powerful tool with just a little bit of creativity. Back in his first, well, I guess it wasn't marketing, right? It was more of a sales job, but he did a marketing function. He saw that just kind of that standard email that was going out was underperforming. Even though he wasn't a copywriting expert, he decided to give the letters a more conversational twist, right? And guess what? This tweak boosted the response rates from, and I noted it here, 7 to 10 calls per 1,000 letters to a whopping 30 to 50 calls. Here's the marketing nugget. In a world where you are bombarded, or we are bombarded, by digital ads and emails, standing out is crucial. The approach wasn't just about tweaking the format. It was about reimagining how to connect with people on a much more personal level. By putting himself in the shoes of the receiver and addressing their specific needs and challenges, he really made the message more relatable and engaging. So those are my three takeaways for you. What did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. Post it on the Let's Talk Marketing LinkedIn page. Leave it in a review on Apple. Slide into my DMs on LinkedIn. Let's keep this conversation going. A special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike. And thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic, but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.